this one.
You are online, Madam Chair.
We're live.
Okay. Nope. Hello? Hello, hello? Hello, hello? Okay. All right. Call the meeting to order. As soon as I get into my big apps, I can help. These are for this package. Let me get organized here. South County, South San Luis Obispo County, Sanitation District meeting of July 18, 2018 will come to order. Pledge of Allegiance, please. All stand.
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I take a roll call?
Roll call, please.
Director Hill?
Here.
Director White?
Here.
Director Nichols?
Here. Agenda review?
I have no changes to
say. I have no changes. I make a motion, then we approve the agenda.
Okay. Second.
Barbara, excuse me. Director Nichols, I'm sorry. There is a revised agenda that changed to the warrant. There's an item for Blake Anton. It was a refund for a connection charge. And so that should be noted that on the agenda, the warrant is different.
Yeah, as with the warrants as amended. I'm sorry, I forgot to add it.
Okay.
Second stand.
Do we need a roll call vote or just a
voice?
Just a
just voice vote.
Yeah. Voice vote. All approved?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Public comments on items not appearing on the agenda.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I wanted to say welcome to Jeremy Gent. I've known Jeremy longer than I've known most of you guys. We go way back. And I look forward to his leadership here at the Sanitation District. With that in mind, I would ask through your board for you to ask Jeremy to help you put some things to bed. Those things are the things that I have come to this podium many times and said before. Rescind the censure of Mayor Hill. Censure Mayor Scholes. Correct the record that Ms. Lucy wrecked Pursue a civil case against John Wallace. Follow the Brown Act and the Public Record Act. These have become fundamental issues for me in this district. You need to put some things behind you. And until you do, they're going to keep coming up. So I wanted to speak to those items. And again, welcome, Jeremy. But I also have some things that I've wanted to touch on that I've heard from the chair. I heard from Vice Chair Nichols in the recent past, in that when there were questions in the packet, questions associated with whatever's gone on, you have said that you called the staff and had your questions answered. For the benefit of the public, those questions should be asked in public so that they can be answered for all of us, because oftentimes the public will have the same question. We will come to the podium and the question doesn't get answered. So you're making decisions in a vacuum without the benefit of the public being fully informed and helping you through and to the next decision. Thank you for your time.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. It's funny how someone that doesn't live within the district always wants to spend a lot of our money. Now, of course, anybody can get up and give their 3 minutes of public comment, but I think it's up to the board to remember their obligation is to the ratepayer, to the people that have ownership here, and to the people that bear the burden, that bear the risk. And I want to remind the board that, you know, I'm speaking to more than just the people in the audience, that there's the people out in TV land, and then there's the thousands of other ratepayers to consider. So I am not against the lawsuit against John Wallace. I think the board at the time approved all of Wallace's projects. So if there was a conflict of interest, that should have been brought forward at that time. I don't think we get do-overs. I don't think a budget was allocated for the legal costs. So we can only guess on what those costs might be. And basically, there's no guarantee of winning. And if we lose, we're going to be out a lot of money. And that's taking time of our legal counsel and our general manager to pursue that. That is a waste of time. And as far as censuring Mayor Scholes or correcting the record of Mary Lucy, another waste of time. In no way does that actually benefit the district. That's going to take time and money away, having the general manager, whoever, write up those issues and bring them before the board, etc. There's no benefit to the district. All of that's history. Thank you.
Chris Victorine, and I again request that the board pursue civil action against John Wallace. As previously noted, the Knutson report clearly identified in the financial analysis section that there was a decline in cash and cash equivalents of about $7 million during the 10-year period ending in 2012, the last full year before John Wallace retired as district administrator. I understand sentiments to move on and spend energy on current operations. However, an effective organization does not bury its history. It faces its mistakes and corrects them. I also understand the reluctance to spend additional funds on legal fees. However, this board was not reluctant to spend $7,500 in legal fees to investigate alleged misconduct of Jim Hill. And this board was not reluctant to pay Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore an additional amount in excess of $100,000 in fees that this board did not approve. It is the board's responsibility to protect the ratepayers. The board did not do that in 2002 through 2012, and John Wallace padded his pockets at the expense of the sanitation district. It is your responsibility as the board of directors to do what you can to correct that. And the February 2017 director bylaws state in paragraph 6.2 that the members of the board of directors shall exercise their independent judgment on behalf of the interest of the entire district, including the residents, property owners, and the public as a whole. The Brown Act guarantees the public's right to attend and participate in meetings of local legislative bodies. Section 54953 reads that all meetings of the legislative body of a local agency shall be open to the public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the legislative body of a local agency. It continues, every agenda for a regular meeting shall provide an opportunity for members of the public to directly address the legislative body on any item of interest to the public. For the board to consider only ratepayer comments would go against the legislative intent of the Brown Act that guarantees the public's right to participate in the legislative process. Thank you.
Good evening. Colleen Kubel, Ratepayer Already. I just wanted to come up and state a couple of things after one of the speakers before me stated that it would be a waste of time to clear the board of everything in the past. And I don't believe that. I don't think this board should believe that. Everything needs to be cleared off of the table so that we can go forward with a clean slate. And those things that were wrong should be righted. Those things that needed to be done, that were not done, need to be done. And I believe that our new administrator can see that. He will see that as he goes further. And I am very hopeful that he will help the board in understanding what really should happen to clear the slate and start fresh and go the right way and not have any contention. That's what our goal is. And so we need to stop any contention that we might have, clear the board, and go forward. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. Consent agenda? Anything on there that anybody wants to pull?
I don't have anything to pull, but I have a comment on one of the items.
Okay.
I'm fine.
You're fine. Would you like to discuss that problem now?
Public comment probably first.
Okay. Public comment on the consent agenda?
I think it's on. You're just not close enough.
All right. This is better.
Jim, too.
We'll work at being more audible.
Good. Julie Tacker again, and I have to say I'm not surprised at the warrants. We've got 2 months' worth, or two weeks' worth, two cycles' worth. That's better. but I have to say is that I'm pleasantly surprised at the legal counsel bill for 3 months being in the neighborhood of under $12,000. If indeed that is for 3 months service, that's on the order of what you want to be spending. With that in mind, some of the previous discussion, this district lost a lot of money in the Wallace years, and it is your fiduciary responsibility to engage your legal counsel just in the discussion. Agendize the matter. It is a closed session matter. Karen White's shaking her head no. Have the discussion. Invite Dan Dow down here. Go into it eyes wide open and get fully informed about what the case was in Santa Maria, what the what Mr. Wallace pled to. What does it all mean? And then you make your decision whether or not to proceed with civil action. And that's the job of your legal counsel, is to guide you through that. But just have the conversation. It's not that absurd. You have to weigh the risks, of course, but that's what you do. That's what you do anytime you consult with an attorney. I'm happy to see cash reports. They don't call them that anymore. But we're able to see the district's finances a little more clearly, which was lacking for a good long time. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Do I have a motion? Or do you want to, which item is it you want to discuss?
It is the financial report. And I note that a couple of times in the past that the Rabobank account had been used for website maintenance issues and so forth. And I think that fund is basically for payroll and and payroll and benefit payments, and I would hope that items including website maintenance would be paid through our normal warrant process whenever possible. And I also note that the Wallace restitution from the criminal court is on the order of $18,000, and I agree with the members of the public who indicated that they'd like to have the board discuss pursuing perhaps additional restitution from Mr. Wallace. So I would request that at some point in the very near future the board would take up that discussion. But with that, I'm prepared to move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Second. Roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes. And with that, we move on to 6A, Director Administrator and Plant Op Report.
So, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator, please bear with me. This is my first meeting. I'll try to get through the Administrator's Report and summarize the Plant Superintendent's Report in the process. So currently there's several capital projects, as you're aware of, going on at the plant. We're finalizing the Headworks project. There's a couple minor punch list items with the screening system that was installed, specifically the bagging system on the screen. But once that's complete, it'll be completely finalized. The Headworks improvements will come to the board with a notice of completion. Redundancy project. This past week, I was able to have a conference call with Kennedy Jenks to talk about some review some comments that were provided to them on their 30% plan review. We have not submitted our full comments back to them on the 30% plan review, and we're still in the process of doing that. As far as the financing state, there's no update since the last meeting on the redundancy project as far as the financial state goes. The PPM manual is going to be a future item where we'll bring that forward for final approval by your board. A date has not yet been determined. Let's see. As far as regional collaboration, I met with Ben Fine of the City of Pismo Beach and two members of the design team from WSC Consulting Group to go over. We met at the site, reviewed some of their plans, and were able to sit down and see how those were able to merge with the redundancy project plans. And we've exchanged those footprints between the two consultants to date so that they can work collaboratively as far as the real estate constraints at the it's a small site, and so we don't want the same groups trying to capture the same area. So we're making sure that that's moving forward. I'm happy to announce that we – on July 9th, we've a new lab technician started. Erica Frost has joined our team. She joins us from Abalone Laboratories, which is a private laboratory out of the city of San Luis, which does do some work for the district, so she's already familiar with some of our samples. She graduated from the University of Miami, Florida, and with a degree in biology. And she's been great to be around, a positive player on the team. And so I'd like to, you know, welcome Erica. And so at some point, I hope you all get to meet her and welcome her to our team. Moving on to the plant operations report, unfortunately, I have to report that on July 4th and then subsequently on July 5th, we had an exceedance of our waste discharge requirements for fecal coliform in our effluent. The flows were high. I think the board's aware that in the past we've had issues with our chlorine contact chamber. So during the peak flows on the 4th of July, as they came through the plant, we did not achieve proper disinfection in the chlorine contact chamber. And that's based on our measurements. The unusual process was that we did not consume more chlorine, which should have been automatically fed during the process through our control system. That did not occur, even though we were seeing about 30% more inflow than a typical day. We actually used less chlorine than a typical day. So, and then the fifth exceedance was really because we pulled, the same condition was going on, but we pulled that sample prior to getting the results of the previous sample. So it was just a follow-through exceedance. So myself and staff and an outside consultant met on Saturday at the plant and made some adjustments to the chlorine contact chamber and our dosing method. And I don't anticipate having to use the full $50,000 budgeted for the chlorine contact chamber as was budgeted for this fiscal year. I think that's a project that we can do in-house with some control optimization. And we should not have this type of exceedance coming out of our chlorine contact chamber moving forward. Everything else was in compliance. The other noteworthy item that is not on here is that the county actually has a bridge project on Air Park Road, which crosses Meadow Lagoon there in Oceano just off Pier Avenue. There was a break to the Oceano CSD force main during construction that resulted in a spill that went into the lagoon. During the cleanup, that water, through the regional board's direction, they wanted that wastewater or that lagoon water to be sent to a treatment plant, which through coordination with the county and OCSD and the contractor, the district has accepted those waters and will likely continue. It's looking like we'll continue to accept a small amount of flow of dewatering water now through October 31st. It's over the course of that whole time, it'll be about 7 million gallons that they will send to the plant. And I've already prepared a bill. It'll likely result in $30,000 to $35,000 in charges to Granite Construction as for treatment of the wastewater. And that completes my report.
I personally would like to thank Manager Gant for his efforts in behalf of OCSD, who was kind of the person or the entity in the middle of that challenge that started on a Friday at 4:45. And also, I have one question. I realize you just started, but I would have thought that somebody would have kind of been on the watch on the 4th of July, knowing that there would be, there obviously would be an excess flow into the plant, and you'd think somebody would have said, we need to check this a little closer.
Yes, Karen, or Director White, I agree that... And that is something that I reviewed with staff. And there were some trends. There were certainly coachable moments there as I looked back at the trends and in hindsight reviewed what was going on, that we could have been more proactive in identifying that this was a potential problem leading into that high flow day. And so there are opportunities for improvement with the plant operators to make sure that this doesn't happen. A couple of the protocols, we've actually increased housekeeping as far as cleaning the chlorine contact chamber, which is one of the things that when it doesn't get done regularly, there's buildup on the walls of the contact chamber, and you'll see these coliforms increase just because of the buildup. And so that cleaning was being done as needed rather than proactively, and so we've moved to monthly cleaning of the chlorine contact chamber. But yes, you're right, that observation moving into the the busy weekend, it was as much flow as we see on like Thanksgiving. So it's a huge amount coming into the plant with the 4th of July. And so we should have done better as far as monitoring that issue. And especially in hindsight, knowing we had issues with the chlorine contact chamber.
Thank you.
For my part, I first want to congratulate you on meeting with Central Coast Blue and getting the footprint issues discussed and sorted out. And I know we'll have a upcoming MOA with Pismo Beach kind of directed toward that. So I'm glad to hear that because of the critical nature of that program that you're on top of that. Also, I'm very pleased to hear of engagement of Ms. Frost, and we're looking to her success here. So I think that's also very positive. And I recognize that you've just started here, but to follow on Karen's comment there on the exceedance, the June numbers, the high inflow, actually, from the numbers that are printed here, the highest was in June rather than July. So I'm a bit confused. The numbers in July don't look all that unusual. And while we had a 920 reading in July, in June, that probably should have clued us that there was something there. And these comments, again, are more to the operating staff. Cause of the exceedance may be due to the district's chlorine controller. I hope we're looking into replacing that or with higher flows experience, chlorine usage should have been higher than normal. Again, I would hope that we're monitoring that if the online if the SCADA isn't picking that up or our online monitoring and instrumentation isn't picking that up, that we're manually following that in anticipated high flow days. Are we doing that now when we anticipate high flow days in the summer? Certainly with potential rain, and I've heard various reports. One can argue the reliability of weather reports, but the monsoon and I've even heard potential rain reports, and I know we've had issues of serious inflow issues with rain events and so forth. So I hope if it comes to that we carefully monitor that to assure that we don't have discharges into our environment. That's our primary charge to the benefit of our citizens, and that is something that we all obviously take very seriously. The high on apparently July 4th or 5th was 9,200 on the fecal with a limit of 2,000. The low for the month is 2, and the typical numbers are single-digit numbers. Rarely do we ever get into the into two digits on a limit of 2,000, which is four digits. So I'm wondering what the ramp rate there was, and why we didn't see the ramp from a single digit up to almost five digits. That's very concerning to me, and I would hope that we'd look into all of our instrumentation, what we're doing to pick this up online, how often we monitor that physically. I'm very concerned with the corrective action. What are we going to do to make sure this does not happen again? So, again, those comments are directed primarily to the operating staff, but I'm very concerned with our chlorine issues and to make sure that we don't exceed discharge limits, especially by a factor of five.
I would assume you will be ready for Labor Day.
Yes.
Any other comments?
I note on the work orders completed, we cleaned the fixed film reactor. That's something that I've been concerned about, the potential for metal fines in the oil there related to bearings. And so I just wanted to mention that so I'm gaining some confidence that we're looking into checking that oil to make sure we don't have metal fines there. And I see also that the ops staff participating in a safety meeting on injuries and fatalities in wastewater treatment plants, that is of the prime importance. And I'm very happy to hear that we had that training presented, and hopefully those the two members of the staff that directly participated in that can share their experience with everyone else. I think that's very positive, so I wanted to pass kudos for that. So thank you very much for the report.
Thanks.
I would like to comment on the concise report in our packet. Very easy to read, very easy to follow, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Any public comment?
Julie Tacker again, and I tend to go right to the Central Coast Blue item when I open this report because it interests me in that co-locating it with the redundancy project, I think, has problems. I don't think it's wise. Your EIR will vet that whole process, I know. But as we move towards there, I still see the overarching issue that hasn't been discussed here anyway, is the governance of this project. Is the sanitation district staff going to be running that project on that site? If so, where's the compensation? Who gets the water? You know, it just starts to, it's got a big, big umbrella over it that really needs to be hammered out before we get into these details. You guys are spending a lot of money. They are spending a lot of money getting into the details and the minutiae. When, if you don't have that governance issue worked out, the whole thing's just going to crash and die. So I think, you know, prioritizing that needs to come sooner as opposed to later. The upcoming agenda item, I think you touched on it, Jeremy, for Kennedy Jenks, but I don't know if this is related to what you talked about, and I'd like to know more about what kind of change order are they looking for? Because we just gave them some change orders and gave them a whole lot of money very recently. The spill, the exceedances, your report speaks clearly to what happened. What I would like to know is what is the district's potential for fines? Were these in enough of an exceedance to reach the minimum $3,000 fine, there's a minimum daily fine, and I wonder if you get two because there were two exceedance, or, you know, it's like, welcome to South Sand, you just got fined. but I know, you know, these things happen, and we have a budget for it just because it can happen. So the lagoon spill is very interesting, and I would like to know the compensation that you seek. What is the formula that gets you to those numbers, $30,000 to $35,000? Because that's very interesting, because that's like 2 days of flow. And how does the district make that kind of money if you amortized it daily or broke it down daily? I just was curious how you got there. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? All right, we will bring it back.
Could
Could we have him answer that question? I don't know.
Would you like to respond to that question on the lagoon?
Sure. On the last question that Ms. Tacker asked in regards to the calculation. So the calculation, which is actually a calculation that the OCSD has pulled from me to use some calculations on their cost recovery as well, and it is just as Julie suspected, the math is our annual operating budget divided by our annual flow, and that results in $390 per 100,000 gallons treated. So basically, there's no bulk treatment, industrial treatment rate established, and due to the emergency nature of this, I established that rate. So basically, the amount of money that we take to process all of our wastewater for a year, I established a per 100,000 gallon rate and have provided that to the county for the cost of treatment. In addition to that, the district did not have weighted labor rates established for staff. And so I worked with Amy, and Amy has prepared weighted labor rates for district staff so that we can charge our full labor rates back to the consultants for the contractor for cost recovery. And so the treatment cost out of that $30,000 to $35,000, that's not a quote. I mean, they're subject to send us more. It's all being metered, what they're sending us. But it was about $29,000 in treatment costs and roughly $5,000 in staff labor during the process of them sending that water.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I might make an additional brief comment about the governance of Central Coast Blue, I share the concern that we need to establish governance policies for Central Coast Blue and the redundancy project as we go forward. But I'm reminded that the redundancy project was supposed to start many years ago, and the original bill was going to be on the order of $12,000 to $15,000. It's almost double that at this point, and as interest rates are continuing to climb, I think it's incumbent on us to pursue parallel paths, and I think we need to get moving on the physical aspects of the project at the earliest, and at the same time we need to be mindful of governance issues. So I agree with that, but I don't think it's a cart before the horse issue. I think it's more of a parallel path issue. But I appreciate the comment.
All right. Do I have a motion to accept 6A? That's a receive and file. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. 6B, conflict of interest code.
So item 6B is an update to the conflict of interest code for the district, and we're asking that the board adopt a resolution 2018-398 and direct staff to process and amend the conflict of interest code with the county no later than October 1st of 2018. The revisions in this update are extremely minor, some updated code references that council has put together and is just part of our biannual requirement to update our conflict of interest code. And I'll turn it over to you, Keith. If you...
Yes, every so often the state agencies charged with implementing regulations for the conflict of interest statutes will change up the numbering to confuse us and to keep us on our toes. They did make some substantive changes, just renumbering some of the sections and putting them in new places. So what the revisions are to the district's conflict of interest codes is simply to reference the correct regulations.
Okay. I have no questions or comments.
I have no question or comment.
Nor do I.
Public comment?
No, I have no comment. Public comment? Okay. Do I have a motion to adopt a resolution?
Madam Chair, I'll move that we adopt Resolution 2018-398 and direct staff to process the amended Conflict of Interest Code with the county no later than October 1st, 2018.
Second.
Any opposed?
We need a roll call.
We need a roll call vote?
Yeah.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes. And we go on to item 6C. Consideration of approval to execute a contract to perform professional auditing services for the district's fiscal year 16-17 and 17-18 and 18-19 financial audits.
So, Jeremy Gent, district administrator, we're asking that the board authorize the district administrator to advise Glenn Burdett of the district's intent to change auditor, and that the board authorize the district administrator to sign and execute a professional services contract with Moss Levy Hartzheim to perform the district audit for 16-17, 17-18, and 18-90 for respective amounts of $9,300, $9,630, and $9,970. In regards to background and discussion, the technical consultants, Paul Karp specifically, met with Glenn Burdett in late June, and during that meeting, they were not interested in completing their the audit at the bid price and were seeking $30,000. Paul could not, which was up from a quote of $11,500, Paul could not come to an agreement with them on an amicable solution for that cost, and so he had drafted this board letter and then passed it on to me on my first day of employment. So I'm bringing that forward as a carryover of the former technical consultants. But Glenn Burdett has requested a substantial increase in fees, and the district was, or the technical consultants, I should say, was not completely satisfied with their performance and the expeditious performance of their last audit. And that's that completes my staff report.
Thank you. Any questions?
No.
Comment.
I have considerable comment. I don't know that I have any questions. I don't know when, and this goes back to the technical consultants, and it's water under the bridge. I just wonder when they learned of this, if the board could have been informed before this relatively late date that we get the packet, because it's something, I would say it's not exactly a surprise, but I'm just wondering when they learned about it and when we could have been alerted. Perhaps in a little bit more timely manner. But again, that goes back to the technical consultants. I don't really have any questions on the report at this time, but I probably do have comment after hearing from members of the public.
All right.
I have nothing.
Public comment, please.
Julie Tacker, and I was very surprised that Glenn Burdett wanted $30,000. I think they didn't want the job, clearly, but you can say that without saying it this way. Just say, no, thank you, and go away. But the Moss Levy prices are terrific. This is what I like to see in a bid. For this kind of work, I've seen other districts spend a whole lot more. But the change order of $5,000 in the middle of their work, to me at the time, I felt like your district was being held hostage and that the work wasn't going to get done unless they got more money. So that's a criticism of Glenn Burdett. My preference, had there been time, would have been for an RFP and other consultants getting a crack at it. I think if at these prices, Moss-Levy probably would have been the low bidder. But I'm curious if other audit firms were consulted, because this is not really how you do it. You want to give all the firms the fair crack so that you get the best bang for your buck for your ratepayers. And, you know, 1 year and then go to bid because of the urgency, I get that. But I was kind of surprised to see 3 years without engaging other consulting firms. And maybe they did, but that's not reflected in the report.
I think we'll all agree that going out to bid is the best option for the district. This is not an ideal world, and we've had a lot of chaos and turmoil. And I think right now it's really important to get the 16-17 and the 17-18 audits done. Moss-Levy has done it before, are familiar with the books, the plant, the equipment. I think that's probably the best way to expedite it. So by going with a 3-year, as long as the contract is severable, if there's problems, then we can always adjust. But I think right now it's the best interest of the district to go forward with this firm and the audits.
Anyone else? Seeing none, come back to the board. Discussion or no questions?
An audit is obviously something that's the district is required to have every year, and it's our obligation as the board to assure that they're facilitated in a timely manner. We owe that to the public to guarantee that we're handling public monies properly and efficiently. What we apparently had going on in the last audit is it's incumbent on the district, first of all, we need to understand that auditors have to be independent. And for an audit to run smoothly with the auditors in a position of independence, the district's books need to be properly organized in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And what we obviously had during the last audit process was a number of, there was a number of people of different contractors and so forth that I'm not convinced were putting our books in the order that could be easily audited. And that was reflected in Glenn Burdett's report, where they had to step in and complete the books for us and then audit them, which puts them in a very awkward position when it comes to independence. They're legally required to be independent. If they have to do our books or tell us how to do our books, that degrades the independence of the auditor. Ron Levy is a guy I have great respect for, Moss-Levy and Hartsheim. I appreciate that they're willing to step in. I believe that when Glenn Burdett finished our last audit, that they were only halfway through a period of upset and grave difficulty that the district has had maintaining our books in an auditable fashion. In other words, preparing books properly in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles for government entities. And so I anticipate that just because the cutoff date of June 30th of 16 ended and they could stop looking beyond that date at the last audit, that going forward our books are probably in similar disarray to what they must have been in the last audit. So I'm not surprised that Glenn Burdett, going in with open eyes and having had to complete our books and make numbers of adjustments, which auditors are normally not required to do, came up with a lot of time spent and difficulty in getting the audit completed. I think they anticipated a repeat of that with this next upcoming audit, and that's probably why the price was so high, and I think they pretty much don't want to deal with it again. I would, whatever we do, I agree with the commenters that putting it out to bid would be ideal, but I also think the comment that we're not in an ideal situation is exactly correct. Moss Levy Hartsheim, the comment was made that they're familiar with our books, our plant, and our equipment. I'll agree that they are familiar with our plant and our equipment, but our books, not necessarily so. I think in years past, our books were kept reasonably in accordance with the expected standards. That seems to have run into problems in the last cycle, and I believe that those conditions will carry forward into the 16-17 time frame. Hopefully, we are getting our accounting situation under better control as it was in the past. I'm glad to see that Ms. Simpson is back and hopefully is getting everything back under control, because there was a time when she was not there and the things went south very rapidly. So hopefully MLH will find that that they can do the audit at the price that they've quoted. But I would not be surprised that if they have to complete the books for us, make all these adjustments and so forth, that the price is going to go up. Their independence may be challenged in doing that. It might be that we have to bring in another CPA to do that and then have Moss Levy audit that work. I'm not sure what we're going to get into here, but clearly we need to start. So I'm prepared to support this issue. I think there's a lot of different facets and ramifications to this particular audit, but we remain behind in the audit, and we're getting behinder every day. So the prices that are quoted, if they hold up, will be I'll be very thankful.
Yeah, I would certainly support moving ahead with Moss Levy and Hartsman. They do have done Oceano Community Service District. We're extremely satisfied with their work. And in the distant past, certainly, OCSD had its challenges with audits, and we're all up and collected and correct now. So anyway, I would certainly support that, and the price is right. I think they probably know, they probably are aware of the situation that they're coming into.
I question that, because I think in when they worked for us in the past, the books were generally in order. And when we transitioned to Glenn Burdett, I think the disjoint came at the time of Glenn Burdett. So Moss Levy Hartsheim may be bidding with the expectation of things as they used to see them, and I don't believe they're going to find him in the good order that they expect, but we'll see. And in any event, I certainly agree that Moss Levy Hartsheim does top quality work, and we're very satisfied with that.
Perhaps, Jeremy, you could give us some clue as to the status of the books right now, or look into it and see that things have changed since the, as far as the record keeping goes and the availability of the records go?
Certainly. I'm happy to look into the status of the books and possibly even review them with an outside CPA to get a cursory review to see if there's, you know, anything's out of order. That being said, in my conversation with Mr. Karp in regards to this item, he did, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact conversation. He talked to Ron specifically about, Ron Levy from Moss Levy, about the, I think it was the 1415 books, which Moss Levy did complete, and I believe that was our current bookkeeper at that time, and specifically had the conversation, did you have issues with those books that were problematic and kept you from completing the audit? And Ron actually took the time to actually check with staff and came back with, no, we didn't have any problems with that at that time. So that being said, I don't know the exact timeline of what, you know, what was being audited when or who was at work when. So I don't know that that timeline applies, but there was at least an attempt to consider that issue, that, that maybe they were taking on something at a value that they couldn't produce. And so we did make the firm aware that, you know, there's potential that these books are, you know, somewhat out of order. Are you concerned about that?
Mm-hmm. I have not read the full contract, but is there any way that if we say go ahead now and we get the first year audit and that's okay, and the second year audit is okay, but the price goes up, is this negotiable beyond the first year?
I don't know the entire language, but I'll review that. There is an option here in the staff report where we could go forward with just a single year with Moss Levy.
Mm-hmm.
That was in a, I included that item in anticipation of this exact concern that you heard from some of the members of the community, that this was not a full RFP done with Moss Levy. They did submit when we hired Glenn Burdett, so we did a competitive analysis then with Moss Levy. They were actually dismissed just because they were actually the previous years, and we were looking to move away from that. But they were very competitive in that initial review, but were not not included because of their past participation, and we were just looking to move off of and move to a different auditor.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Typically, we would engage an auditor for on the order of 3 years. It's good practice to periodically change audit firms, and I think we've had Moss Levy in the past. They've done excellent work with us. We used Glenn Burdett, and I think Glenn Burdett came on at a time when we had numbers of contract staff people and contract accountants and or bookkeepers or whatever they were. And I believe that Moss Levy stepped into a condition that they were not expecting. And again, I'm concerned that Glenn Burdett stepped into the condition, and while I would like to stay with Glenn Burdett, we did have them engaged for 1 year. That is a change of auditor. I don't really have any issues going back to Moss Levy Hartsheim again. Their reputation is sterling, and I'm willing to support them for a 3 year go, after which we might consider again changing auditors as a good financial practice.
Yeah, I'd support him. I think, you know, there's a lot of public knowledge about the problems that that the sanitation district had with the audit. And if they don't know it, they should know it. So I'm not concerned with them not knowing that there will be challenges ahead. And I would make a motion that we approve execution of a contract to Moss Levy to perform audit. Moss, I don't think I have that name quite correct. Moss Levy and Hartzman, that they perform professional auditing services for the district's 2016-17, 2017-18, 2018-19 financial audits.
Second.
All agreed?
Here?
Yeah. No, all agreed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or do we need a roll call?
I would request a roll call.
Okay, roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes. And we move on. Item 6D, discussion and consideration of approval to submit an application for membership of Jeremy Gent to the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 1 and 1A Advisory Committee.
Thank you. Staff is asking that the board recommend myself, Jeremy Gent, as the district's representative to the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, Zone 1 and 1A, advisory committee to fill the vacancy of Paul Karp, and direct staff to submit an application to the County Board of Supervisors for formal consideration and appointment.
Madam Chair, after public comment, I'll be delighted to make a motion to that effect.
I was just going to say that as someone who sits in on that board meeting, which was yesterday, you missed it, I would be very, very, very satisfied if you could become a member of that board. And there's going to be a lot of moving parts in the next 2 years there.
Sure.
Okay. Public comment? None? More discussion by the board?
Not for me.
Madam Chair, I move that we recommend Mr. Jeremy Gent as the district's representative to the County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zones 1-1A Advisory Committee to fill the vacancy of Mr. Karp and direct staff to submit an application to the Board of Supervisors for formal consideration and appointment.
Second. Roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes. And we shall move on. 7, miscellaneous items. Do we have any written communications?
No, there are no written communications.
Board member of communications.
Nothing for me.
I would again ask that the board in the near term take up the issue of Mr. Wallace following the criminal trial that was held.
Okay, I think that is a discussion that we need to have. There's a lot of background, and I don't think we need to pursue it as a high priority. At the moment, we've got a lot on our plates. We have a new administrator. We're all getting things together on a plate, and I think that one can be sidetracked for a while yet.
I'm not interested in seeing it on the agenda.
Okay. So we now go to closed session.
Yes, Madam Vice Chair, we'll be going to closed session for conference with legal counsel, existing litigation. Paragraph 1 of Subdivision D of Government Code Section 54956.9, one case, San Luis Obispo County Superior Court case number 18CV-0402, Carol A. Wolf versus Matthew Robert Dutra, Duna Vista Mobile Home Park, South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, Alexander Keith, Christine Keith.
Public. Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And the two previous meetings, you had conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, initiation of litigation pursuant to the same subdivision section that was just cited for this. So, because I wasn't there, I want to know if you initiated litigation against these people. I'd be curious what the case is about. I guess I can go down and look up the case number. But as I said at the two previous meetings, I had hoped this was initiation of litigation against Mr. Wallace. And it is a conversation you need to have. And there are statutory time constraints. You need to have that conversation. Have it and vote against it, Karen. That's how it works. You have the conversation and you vote against it. You don't block it from going on an agenda. And it's probably not a conversation that we'll get to be a part of. That is a closed session agenda. So what is the harm in having the conversation? Except you might go into it with an open mind and actually vote yes.
Excuse me, Julie.
Yes, I have wondered.
Public comment is for the board in general, not to specific board member.
Not necessarily. Then the message is to all of you that you can have the conversation and you can vote no. Sometimes people actually do that. Agendize something. Find out what it's all about after your staff has gone out and done the work. And you vote no. We don't want to pursue it. But you have to have the conversation first. Go in with eyes wide open. Clearly, you've done that with tonight's item. You've had some preliminary discussion. Somebody has initiated litigation. And you did it. What if you just said, nope, don't want to hear about it? So, that is my message. You have to be transparent. You have to be fiduciaries for the district. Have the conversation. Learn all you can about it. Then make your decision.
We will adjourn to closed session. On 7/18/18.
Thank you all.
Thank you all for your patience.